Hello, this is Nicole Hunter from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine, June 2018 edition. Looks like we're in the third week, June 18th. So on the cover of this edition is Michael B. Jordan, and we actually were, we stopped at his article where he's, you know, talking about the fire next time. So let's continue on with some of the questions Essence has asked him, and then he responds. So now that you've cleared the air, let's go back to one question that he got a lot of slack for. So this was the question: does it make you more hesitant, especially now knowing that this rumor is out? Are you more conscious of who you might be seen with? And I think what it was is the question. It might have been the question before that. Okay, I know what it is. Okay, let's go back. With you having all these strong black women in your life, how did your family respond to the rumors about you not dating black women? So his response was, my family and everybody laughed about it. It's so funny to everybody because it couldn't be further from the truth. Anybody who knows me knows I like women, period, especially my sisters. My dad and my mom both said it. If they only knew. And that's the thing that keeps me not tripping about it. You know what? I mean, I'm human. And the thing about it is that it bothers me most when it's your own people who want to believe something that's far from the truth. You know what I'm saying? Look at my work. Look at what I do. Look at what I'm about as a person. Look at my upbringing, my culture, where I come from. How could I not love and appreciate my own race? Does it make you more hesitant, especially now knowing that this rumor is out there? Are you more conscious of who you might be seen with? Unfortunately, a little bit. It makes me hesitant about whoever I'm seen with. I'm finally starting to get to a place now where I don't care. But it bothered me for a minute. It made me more conscious of things I say and how I move, and what could happen if I leave a club or a restaurant or the movies. If I leave anywhere, any known place with anybody, there's going to be speculation. If it's a woman, it's going to be put under a microscope for everybody to pick apart and make the assumptions, and the trolls go at it, and all of a sudden it's truth. It's the cost of being in the position that I'm in, and you just got to be aware of it. It sucks, but it is what it is. Now that, so the next question right here is, it looks like we're caught up. So here's the next question. Now that you've cleared the air about this, what is it about a woman that captures your attention? Man, bruh. The eyes. Eyes are important to me. You can tell a lot. The eyes. They don't tell lies. The neck. The hands. The hands? I've never heard that before. There's something about a woman's hands. It's important. Of course, I'm interested in lips and body, but I'm just not looking for looks. I'm into the whole person. Also, her smell. How the woman smells. It's crucial. I want to pivot to Black Panther for a quick second. One thing I want to ask you, man, is how does it make you feel when people are like Eric Killmonger was right? It's on shirts, hashtags. It's like a whole movement. I feel proud. You know what I'm saying? Because me and Ryan Coogler, we put a lot of work into that character, and we wanted to represent a perspective that was never really put on screen before. The character, that's real, got some real pain and issues that a lot of people don't relate to. And so to see people getting on Killmonger's side, it makes me real proud. Back to the fact that you are in Philly shooting Creed too. One thing I noticed is that people are kind of like, how come Ryan isn't doing it? Maybe you can't speak to that a bit. Or maybe you can speak to that a bit. Ryan, he's executive producer as well. You know what I'm saying? So he's still involved, but sometimes schedules just don't line up, man. And as you see, he was busy. Just a little bit. Yeah, a lot of things on his plate, man. So we always keep it in the family. He is always actively involved, but it gives us an amazing opportunity to give someone else a chance. Stephen Caple Jr. is an incredible director, and he's going to put his fingerprints all over this one. Looking forward to it. It's a nice little action-packed, heartfelt story. It's in a real good place. Creed deals a lot with legacy, and it makes me wonder, how do you want to be remembered? It goes back to the quote, live your dash. It just means to live your life between the dash, between the day you were born and the day you die, and make the most of it. Because we're only here for a short amount of time. And it's like, I want to have a legacy. I want people to look back at my career and the things I've done and the people I've touched and the communities I've influenced, and for them to say that he made an impact. He changed what people think. Last thing, man, is there anything that normally doesn't get put into these interviews that you want to say? I'm getting ready to start up a couple things, man. Foundations for Inner City Kids. I really want to make it easier for them to dream. I want to start a charter school. The curriculum people learn is outdated. We got to change the way we educate. I want to start influencing the youth in a real big way. That's definitely something on my 10-year agenda. Which leads into another good article about a man's place. As hashtag MeToo evolves, actor Terry Crews and social justice advocate Tony Porter discuss the role of black men in the fight to support women. 8 months ago, a shift began, one that rattled our consciousness and made us question what we considered normal behavior. Last October, when allegations of sexual misconduct began stacking up against Harvey Weinstein, it seemed as though a scab had been ripped off, a never-quite-healed wound, one after another. Nearly 100 women spoke up about their encounters with the now-infamous film producer. What followed were more allegations from countless women against numerous male executives and notable personalities, most of whom, like Weinstein, were tossed from their pedestals. And let's not forget that this ball started rolling 4 years ago when decades-old rape allegations against Bill Cosby resurfaced. The recent downfall of rich, powerful men has dominated the headlines. But the issue of sexual violence against women is sadly nothing new, nor is it unique to Hollywood. In 2006, activist Tarana Burke, senior director at Girls for Gender Equity, launched the Me Too movement as an outlet for young women of color from low-income communities who had been victimized. 12 years later, hashtag Me Too has sparked a national conversation, with actor Terry Crews being the first male celebrity to stand up. By sharing his experience of being assaulted by a male film agent in 2016, he stood in solidarity with fellow survivors. And although the alleged incident fell outside of the statute of limitations to pursue criminal charges, Crews is proceeding with a civil lawsuit. Essence paired Crews with Tony Porter, a chief executive officer of A Call to Men, an organization that focuses on teaching healthy masculinity to the masses, to share ideas about grooming the next generation. Why it's important for black men to hold one another accountable, and how they can offer a hand in pushing the hashtag MeToo movement forward. We asked one question and they took it from there. So the question that Essence asked is, where do you think we are in this movement with the hashtag MeToo movement? And Terry Crews' response is, you know, the impact that hashtag MeToo has had over the past few months has been gigantic. This movement has crossed all kinds of boundaries, whether it be racial, political, or economic. And now we just have to be very careful that it doesn't get fouled in the symbolic victory category. Even though Harvey Weinstein Weinstein was taken out, there are still a lot of people who would gladly sacrifice one of their own so they can continue questionable behavior behind the scenes. It's only when people start getting arrested for acts of violence against women, from domestic abuse and harassment to rape, that we'll begin seeing real repercussions. That's why I'm continuing my civil lawsuit and being a part of this movement. I don't care about the money, and I don't know what the outcome will be, but I want to be an example of what it means to hold people accountable all the way. It's about fighting for yourself. And then Tony Porter's response is, I really appreciate what you've said, Terry. I'd also like to add the hashtag MeToo is not the first wave of a woman's movement. We've had several dating back to the early 1800s and right up through the battered women's movement. Back then, men found solace in defining those causes as being a woman's issue. But this is a humanity issue, because we live in a male-dominated society. I believe that one of the reasons why some movements were not successful is because we, as men, did not admit to our responsibility, nor did we play a role in finding solutions. This is a wonderful time for us to be on the right side of history, but I also recognize that it comes on the heels of so much trauma that women have endured. Having men who are willing to give of themselves and speak about issues from a personal standpoint is the way we're going to engage other men. That's what we've been missing. Sorry. And then Cruz's response is, agreed. Oh, I'm sorry, readers. I had something caught in my throat. Agreed. And we as black men can really see the inequality. When it's between white and black people, but when it's between men and women, even among our own, men have had the tendency to look at women as not quite equal, as they've got rights up to a point. And then Tony Porter's response is, historically speaking, and we can go back to Sister Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, and Fannie Lou Hamer, to the civil rights movement with Rosa Parks, a little later with Audre Lorde and Angela Davis, and even now with Tarana Burke and the sisters who started Black Lives Matter. Black women have had our backs from Jump Street. They've carried this torch, and we really got to get in this space in a much bigger, more critical way as black men joining arms with our sisters. We can't do that by practicing male domination. Holding men accountable is very important. When you look at men collectively, there's a minority who perpetrate violence against women and girls. The majority of men don't. And that's the group we have to be intentional in reaching. It's the rest of us, that majority, who create the fertile ground that abusive men rely on. At A Call to Men, we're teaching boys what it means to be a man. We believe that we're the first generation of men who are actually being asked in a crucial way to promote healthy manhood. Individually, men have always done it, but there's never been a situation where we're asking men to really invest in the next generation. Terry Crews' response is, it's true that the majority of men don't commit violence or engage in harassment, but there is an overreaching belief that men are somehow above women. I'm guilty of having believed that I was more valuable than the woman in my life, simply because I'm a man. I learned that from living in a patriarchal society. Everything leans toward the man being the boss. Even as a son, you're treated better. It's inherent. It also why men get paid more and why we get more props. Just think about when somebody says that you're doing something like, girl, you know, doing something like a girl, you know. What's funny about Twitter is that you can type in your name and hear so many conversations about yourself, and I eavesdrop. I do. Just recently, a black man tweeted, Terry Crews wants to be one of the girls, as if being a woman is weak or terrible, as if I was demeaning or degrading myself. That was his attitude. And then Porter's response is, that man coming at you on social media is a perfect example of why we have to be intentional now. As his movement slows down and the pressure reduces a little bit, men are gathering their footing and looking to circle around one another to fight back. Questioning somebody's or someone's manhood is a way that men put one another back into the man box. That's a phrase we coined at a call to men some years ago. We use it because it's catchy. From an academic perspective, it's about the collective sociological of manhood. We ask men to envision a box and all the ingredients that go inside that define what it means to be a man. That men are supposed to be tough, courageous, and athletic. And then there's the idea that we don't ask for, offer, or accept help, and that with the exception of anger, we don't share our feelings and emotions. Also, that we're taught to place less value on women and treat them as property and sexual objects. And Cruz's response is, when I was about 12 years old, I remember liking a girl. So I went to an older guy and said, man, I'm so nervous. What do I say? What do I do? He told me to lie to her. Let me put you on a game, young man, he said. Don't ever show love. But tell her you love her because you want sex. Then you move on. In fact, you want more than just one girl. That's the advice I got, and I was hurt by it. I was just a kid, you know? My son is 13, and he's not going to grow up in that same world that I grew up in. He's not going to be exposed to pimp culture, and he doesn't have a father who beats the mess out of his mother. I watched my father beat my mother, which caused me major emotional trauma. I think of all the women in my life who've been scarred by abuse and how the cycle has perpetuated. They might say to their sons, you ain't just like your daddy wasn't and it's starts all over again. We have to stop that cycle with our generation. And then Porter's response is a fatherless generation. When I hear you talk about growing up in a home where domestic violence was present, I think of the young men we speak to. Today, we estimate that 80% of men who abuse women grew up in a home where abuse was present. Now we're not suggesting that 80% of the men who grew up in a abusive home became abusive. Instead, we're saying that if you put 100 men who are abusers in a room and ask if abuse happened in their home, 80 of them would raise their hands. There's also an epidemic of fatherlessness in the United States. It crosses all cultural boundaries, but within our group, the Black community, a sizable percentage of our boys are growing up without a dad present in the home. And I'm not talking about a non-custodial dad. I'm talking about fatherless, which is a fairly new term that means there's no dad around whatsoever. It could be that your mom has mentioned him, or maybe you've met him once or twice, and that's it. There's a generation of boys who need men like us to really put in time. Otherwise, this epidemic will continue. We can talk about sports and say that was a good shot, but I think it's more important to talk about love. I'm very intentional about my three sons. Our conversations begin and end with, I love you. If we're talking to boys who are not our biological sons, we can say, I love you. I care about you. They need to hear that. You know, Terry, I followed your career from playing football to being an actor. I'm sure that a lot of men like your tough guy roles in action movies, but I enjoyed your work on Everybody Hates Chris the most. With your character, Julius, you modeled a dad in the home. He wasn't perfect, but he was making it happen, holding it down with a regular 9-to-5 and loving his family. Cruz responds, thank you, man. What was so great about Julius was that he respects his wife, or respected his wife. She was an equal, and he listened to her. Julius knew she was wise. Like him, I might have strength and muscles, but as I've often said, my wife tells me where things should go. I may be able to lift mountains, but she says, pick that up and put that over there. And I'm like, I got you. That's how being a team works. She sees things I can't see. But I've had to challenge myself, too. For instance, I had an addiction to pornography. As a man, I believed that sex was owed to me. When I didn't get it, I used pornography as a crutch. My wife's fearlessness in saying, I'm done, that's enough. And my realization that I chose to believe the lie about what I was owed, or what made me revamp my whole life. Another thing that men don't realize is that success offers the safest place to hide. There's the hollow effect, and while everybody else is thinking that you're the greatest, you know, it's all BS, and the real you is messed up. That's why it's surprising to learn who these men really are. The ones we thought were at the top of their games. It's like, what happened? Responsibility and accountability. And this is Porter's response. It's so important for men to hear someone like you talk about your challenges, because it allows us to be vulnerable. It allows us to do our own self-exploration, and then really connect where we are on our journeys. When you speak about your addiction to pornography, I think about boys as young as 10 years old today first viewing pornography. That's a fifth grader. They think they're learning about sex, but what they don't realize is that they're learning about the hatred of women. If we don't grab a hold of them quickly, they'll soon be viewing pornography on a regular basis, and misogyny really starts to set in. It's incumbent upon us as black men, in relationship to our responsibility and accountability to black women, to have our voices out there. If we want men to have a transformational experience, which is how we believe they become better men, it's by grabbing their hearts, and most of that we do by sharing experiences and one another and being transparent. We need to keep this thing going, and we need men like you, Terry, to keep speaking to our young brothers. They will listen. And Terry's response is, it feels like all of the things I've ever done in my life and career have brought me to this point where I can speak and have people hear me. That's why I'm so thankful for people like you, Tony, that we can actually have this conversation. I'm unifying with you. On to a lighter note, a lighter article. Love and life. Go hard and go home. Yes, your career can directly impact your romantic prospects. In her new book, Boss Bride, The Powerful Woman's Playbook for Love and Success, Essence senior editor Sheree K. Jackson explores how. Here she gives us exclusive tips on ways to find satisfaction in your personal and professional life. I entered 2008 with the goal to gain at least 200 pounds every 2 weeks. That's right. I wanted a full serving of a man on a date at least twice a month. As long as he had a smile and solid values and was financially stable, I was open to meeting him. I had settled into my job in a cute apartment in New York City. What was missing was a steamy love life. I realized that, like the position and the place, hot dates were not going to find me. I had to be proactive about achieving the connection I craved. And let me tell you, my life transformed when I leaned into love. Over the past 10 years, I've traveled the world learning the secrets of successful daters and couples while navigating the workforce. It is an honor to serve you as I hunt down the latest on matters of the heart, from walking around Harlem asking women about their most recent orgasm to producing surprise marriage proposals at Walt Disney World, to speaking at last year's Europe Dating Awards in Amsterdam. I share my research, including insight from more than 100 working wives in Boss Bride, the powerful woman's playbook for love and success. And looks like that we're going to go over the top strategies to increase your satisfaction. Number one, own your inner boss bride. So what is a boss bride? You ask, giving me a side eye. Well, she's a woman who fuses the characteristics of a effective boss. Focus, strategy, delegation with the best qualities of a bride at her wedding, being happy and charming and enjoying the moment. Every woman can be a boss bride, whether she has been married for 10 years or is unsure if she ever wants to say, I do. No matter your job title or relationship status, you can tap into the mentality to make today one of your best days. Before turning 30, I had battled cancer, been laid off from my dream position, and I found out I was the other woman. I learned early to own my power and live in the now. My biggest boss bride moments came on the same June day 2 years ago. That morning, I got the contract to write this book. And that evening, I left a relationship with a man I thought I would marry. I did what was right for me, not focusing on what it looked like. It was the perfect chance to recommit to the one person who would be with me every day of my life, the woman in the mirror. When I was courageous enough to meet the best me and make a vow to always love her, my life blossomed to include dates on different continents and even a new soulmate that taught me people don't treat you the way you treat them. People treat you the way they see you treat yourself. Prioritize love. There's a reason the cruelest punishment in prison is to be placed in solitary confinement, in an isolated room with no contact to the outside world. We were not created to be alone. So decisions on who we share our hearts, bodies, and beds with are the most important ones we can make. Set a goal for how you will expand love in your life this summer and put it on the calendar. One of the best habits of happy working wives was to schedule their personal lives just as they did in their careers. And then write the epilogue. You are living in your own love story right now, and it's time to declare your destiny. In coaching, I have clients fast forward and write about their 65th birthday party. Who was there? What are you proud to have accomplished? What are you doing in your life, and where do you live? Take time to imagine your tomorrow or better plan today. So it looks like we're going to stop right here, and we're going to follow up with on the June 25th episode of this Boss Bride Guide. My name is Nicole Hunter, and I hope that you've enjoyed this edition of Essence Magazine. I'm reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you.